Last case on our calendar is 07595 and 651, State of Ohio versus Fernando Cabrales. Justice Lansinger has recused herself in this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Lansinger, Judge Michael Fain, who's a judge of the Second District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge Fain.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. We are here today to ask that you find the legislative intent in the trafficking and possession statutes, the legislative intent that the First District has ignored. This court has set forth a very simple test for establishing what is a legislative intent in State versus Rants. The court should look at the elements of the statutes in the abstract, and if those elements overlap, then they are allied offenses, and a person cannot be convicted of both unless they have a separate animus for each crime.
Counsel, isn't the rationale offered by the appellate court here is that it was the same drugs, and that seems to be their focus in deviating from the test?
Yes, that was one of the reasons that they picked for why these should be considered allied offenses, by looking at the fact that it was the same drugs involved in this case.
And you're saying that that violates the looking at it in the abstract?
Yes, it does.
But put looking at it in the abstract aside for a moment, and if you did that, does it matter that they're the same drugs?
If you were to go back to pre-Rants law, the way the statutes are written today, I don't believe that it does make a difference that they are the same drugs. If we had a statute, as some of the other states that have been cited to by Mr. Cabrales, where it's a possession with an intent to distribute, then I would say that yes, possession in that case would merge. But the way our laws in Ohio are written, that's not the case. We have separate possession statutes and we have separate trafficking statutes.
But how can a person prepare for shipment, ship, transport, deliver, prepare for distribution, or distribute a controlled substance without possessing it, at least constructively?
The way the person can do that without having actual possession would be in a situation such as a middleman. If I were a person who was involved in trafficking drugs, but I never possessed them, I could do that by being a person who found buyers for dealers. Well,
then you're in complicity.
Then you are getting into complicity to commit.
Don't you
that
need to
crime.
Do an apples-to-apples comparison of offense A and offense B, where you're talking about the principal offender? Otherwise, you argue too much, because take a subtle case. Take theft and receiving stolen property. If complicity to commit theft doesn't necessarily involve receiving the stolen property, there would be no allied offenses of similar import, wouldn't there?
When you look at the receiving stolen property and the theft, much like with the rape and kidnapping and the robbery and kidnapping, every theft will involve a receiving stolen property.
But if I tell you where to go to find your victim, I'm in complicity, but I haven't received the property.
That's correct, and you would not be charged with receiving stolen property in that case.
So they're not allied offenses of similar import, and nothing could be. If you admit to the possibility of comparing being guilty as a complicitor versus of A versus being the principal offender of B, because it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
I'm sorry, I'm in a little bit of trouble following your example there. Could you restate
I just think
that?
Your argument argues too much, because there will be no two offenses that can ever be allied offenses of similar import if you're comparing being a complicitor to A with being the principal offender under B.
I don't believe that's the case. If that were the case, you wouldn't be able to say that the receiving stolen property was an allied offense of theft. If that were my argument, then but that's not my argument. My argument is that you have to look at these statutes in the abstract. You have to look at the language that the legislature has chosen to use. And they have chosen to use language that says that these are two separate offenses, that these are two different societal evils that we wish to combat, and that they can be punished separately. This is a point that was brought up in the First Circuit case of, I'm sorry, Sepulveda, where they said that it's not easy to possess with or to traffic without possession, but it is possible. When you look at the cases out of Colorado and North Carolina that I've cited to, They point out that the laws as they are drafted are aimed to combat two different things. They're aimed at two different types of conduct. That possession of the drugs is one type of societal evil that the legislature wishes to prevent by preventing people from possessing the drugs that they may use for their own personal use, which will cause some harm to society. And they want to prohibit the distribution of drugs for a different reason, to prevent the people who want to use it to hurt themselves. These are two different types of conduct. These are two different behaviors. And just because they're the same drugs, that's a red herring that gets in the way of looking at the legislature's intent. If the legislature wanted to say that you cannot be convicted of both possession and trafficking of the same drugs, they could go back to the laws that we had in 96, prior to 96, where they contain the possession in all of the trafficking statutes. They could go to laws that other states have where that were cited in Mr. Cabrales' brief, where there is the crime is possession with the intent to distribute. But those are not the crimes that the Ohio legislature has chosen to draft. And under Rance, we need to look at the words that they have used and look at those words and not the facts of individual cases. Otherwise, we get back to cases like Newark versus Vazirati, which is court specifically overruled in Rance. In looking at the possession and trafficking, it is possible to possess without trafficking, and it is possible to traffic without possessing. Also looking at the legislative history of these crimes, if you look again.
As a principal offender, can I be guilty of trafficking as a principal offender without also be guilty of possession as a principal offender?
Yes.
How?
I can facilitate the distribution of drugs by directing the trafficking of those drugs and never have any possession over those.
But how have I violated the trafficking statute other than as a complicitor in that situation?
If I'm the person that's responsible for causing all this distribution, then I am the person that's the principal offender of that crime.
Well, if I have that much responsibility for what happens to the drugs, don't I also constructively possess them?
Not necessarily. It certainly makes it easier to distribute those drugs if you possess it, but it is not necessary.
You're exerting control over the drugs?
Not directly. If I'm directing other drug traffickers, I am a principal offender in the trafficking of drugs.
What about if you're financing the whole operation? For example, they don't define ship, but if you're paying for the shipment in the event that it is by public transport, would that satisfy the prepare for shipment and shipping without possessing?
I believe it would. There's a number of ways that it could be done. And again, as other courts have pointed out, it's obviously much more common for a person to possess the drugs that they are going to distribute, but it's not necessary. It's not an element that the state has to prove to have a person be convicted of trafficking in drugs. Looking at the legislative history in Ohio, we have had laws in the past. If you look at the first district case of State versus Jennings, which was cited by Mr. Cabrales, that is looking at the older laws that Ohio had, where it did make sense to say that these offenses should merge, because under the old law, possession was included in the trafficking statute.
Your reading of Rant seems to require such an abstract comparison of every single element without any factual application. And I'll be very honest with you, I have never been fond of Rant, so you can know right where I'm coming from. It seems to me that a realistic application of Rant should be that you compare what is actually charged and look at only the elements that apply to the charge, so that if you are financing an operation in the abstract, you do not possess, perhaps you can make an argument. But if you actually put the drugs in the car, as alleged here, you actually possessed them. And so you have to take that comparison of what actually happened and look at the abstract of that, but you don't look at the abstract of the 14 other ways you could commit the crime and say, because he didn't do the 14 other ways, therefore, there's no allied. It seems to me you're getting way too technical in the application of Rance, and it gets rid of a common sense application that he put the drugs in the car. He clearly possessed them in here, so why isn't that an allied?
If we go down that path, what will happen most likely is that each district will look at the facts of similar cases and likely come to different results. It'll cause many more cases to come before this court to help re-tied together all these...
Why would any court look at this case could come to a different result if he actually physically possessed the drugs and was charged with possession?
My response to that, again, is that using Rants in the abstract, looking at the laws in the abstract, makes sense because it makes it easier for courts to line up the elements of each offense and see whether or not the legislature intended for these to be one or two different crimes. If we go back to looking at things under the factual basis, for the legislature to get their true intents out, they're going to have to write exception after exception after exception to try to...
If we look at the factual basis only as to what aspect of the statutes apply, and in this one, the intent to distribute and the actual possession are the only ones you look at. You don't look at all the other abstract ways you can commit the crime of trafficking. You look at what happened in this case, then you look at the abstract law that applies to what happened in this case, and they match.
Looking at only this case, it might be very easy to make that clear-cut distinction, but in other cases down the road, it may not be. And we have to look at the bigger picture. We have to look at what's going to make the laws most consistent. And the way to make the laws most consistent in Ohio is to continue to look at the elements in the abstract. That's the beauty of the Rants test. It's a very clean, simple to apply, bright line test. It has us look at the words that the legislature has chosen to describe criminal conduct. It doesn't leave a great number of ifs, ands, or buts. It doesn't leave different scenarios that might change things one way or another. And again, in this case, it might be very clear cut one way or another looking at the facts. However, in another case, it won't be. And in those cases, we're going to start getting into the point where we're going to have different districts going different ways, and the law in Ohio will not be consistently applied. And what we want to achieve is consistency in the law.
Well, we have Rants right now, and we don't have consistency.
Then I would say that this court should take this case as an opportunity to inform the district courts, or the appellate courts, that Rants needs to be applied as written. You need to look at the elements in the abstract, line them up side by side, and if they do not overlap, then they are not allied offenses. It's all right with the court. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heenan. Ms. Agar.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court, if Rants was that simple and that logical and produced the perfect result every time, then this court would not have released the decisions in State versus Adams, Shaker Heights versus Mosley, State versus Yarborough, State versus Fears, or State versus Cooper, where the strict comparison of the elements of the statutes were not followed by the court.
Does your cross-appeal depend upon our overruling Rants?
I think at least a clarification of Rants, if the court adopts the view of Rants that the prosecution has taken at this point in time, then yes, it would. Because the prosecution is reading Rants as demanding purely a pie-in-the-sky, strict comparison of the written words of the statute, elementary comparison to determine, and I agree with the questions that came from this bench. If we do that and we throw in complicity, there is no allied offense in Ohio. You can't find any two offenses that you can't make some abstract argument or come up with some abstract fashion in which they could fail the Rants test. You don't have allied offenses anymore if you do what Mr. Heenan is urging the court to do. And this court has already recognized that. It's implicitly recognized that in the decisions that I just cited, which did not strictly compare the elements of the statutes involved. Where is the strict comparison of elements?
Wouldn't an even more conventional application of Rants distinguish between an offer to sell drugs where you don't have to possess them? In any way, don't even have to be real, from possession.
And I agree. And if you look at an offer to sell where no drugs are ever produced or no drugs are needed to be produced in order to render a conviction and compare that to possession, you don't have allied offenses. Not because you need to use some strict comparison of the elements, but because if you look at the animus. The second part of the allied offense test, which everybody seems to forget in trying to force the test into a strict comparison of the elements of the statute, there's a separate animus in offering to sell drugs that don't exist or fake drugs compared to possessing actual drugs. And the court can easily distinguish those two.
Aren't the differences in the five cases that you cited in how we applied Rance is we took the element of the case that applied to the facts of the case and compared it to the second charge?
Certainly. Whereas instead of looking at the statute, you looked at the facts of the case. What crime was actually charged here, not what crime exists in the statute somewhere that doesn't apply to this case.
But what was Rance,
the crime actually charged?
In Rance, we have a pretty strong statement about this bright line we were trying to establish. Does Gladys apply here? Does Gladys apply only to civil cases? I don't think so.
Well, I think
you're really asking us to overrule Rance, because Rance has a clear statement that you look at the statute to eliminate all of these subjective case-by-case examples and look at the statute and see if the statutes and see if there's elements that are one's missing.
Well,
so you want us to go back to pre-Rance, I think.
I have to agree that I'm not a great fan of Rance either, as it currently exists if you take only that bright line language from it. Now, Rance also cites the Deems case and other pre-Rance cases that don't rely on that bright line test and that rely on the much more sensible test of does commission of one offense necessarily include commission of the other? And if you take that test and look at the offense that's actually charged, not the offense that might possibly have been charged under different facts, it creates a fairly simple and I think fairly easy to understand test. And then you can go on from that point to look at whether there's a separate animus or whether the two offenses are committed separately. And you don't get into this incredibly strained interpretation that is being produced by some of these attempts to find ways that clearly allied offenses aren't allied so that we can create a trial penalty for, in this case, for example, for a drug dealer who refuses to cooperate and reveal his sources to the undercover narcotics agent and chooses instead to exercise his right to trial, and therefore in response receives 24 years in prison, whereas the two people who transported the drugs received 2 years in probation.
If we construed Rance to require a principal offender to principal offender comparison of the two statutes in the abstract, would you argue that as to trafficking, it's not possible to violate that statute as a principal offender without also violating the possession statute?
I'm not sure it's possible even throwing in complicity, given the definition of possession in Ohio. That constructive possession has nothing to do with actual physical possession, but addresses only control of the drugs. And in fact,
but if you're merely a broker who introduces the seller to the buyer, period.
Well, in this case, Mr. Corrales was a translator. His basic involvement in this case was as a go-between between the buyer and the seller over the phone, translating Spanish instructions into English instructions for the people who were delivering the drugs. That was his involvement in this case in the state of Ohio. Now, there was some indication from one person involved that he might have been present when the drugs were loaded in California. But if his possession of the drugs ended at that point, Ohio has no jurisdiction over a possession offense here. That's not the way he was charged. And believe me, if they had caught the individual who had payrolled this whole thing, he would have been on this indictment charged with these same three offenses. Physical possession has never had anything to do with the way that transportation is and possession are charged, at least in Hamilton County. Because constructive possession and complicity to possession also exist. And you simply cannot cause or help to cause a drug to be moved, delivered, transported, or manufactured without exercising some form of control over it, either as a principal or as a complicitor.
In constructing these statutes, is there any indication that the legislature prescribed punishment for possession in creating the penalties for trafficking? Is there a significant difference between the possession and the trafficking?
Well, in this case, we have a very particular form of possession also, which creates an even more difficult problem, because the possession offense that Mr. Corrales was convicted of was not simple possession for personal use. It was possession of a super amount, a specified amount of drugs. And this court's own decision in Chandler says that conviction under that statute requires that there actually be drugs to test, to establish that he possessed the drug, and to weigh, to establish that they weighed more than the amount in question. And that takes out that whole argument that the prosecution loves to raise in these cases, that you can have a fake sale or a sale of fake drugs and never possess any actual drugs. You can't if you're charged under this statute.
Is there a significant, excuse me, sorry for my raspy voice, but is there a significant difference between the penalty for possession, even in this case, as opposed to trafficking charges in this case?
No, in the legislature rationalized the penalties for possession and trafficking in these super amount cases for a reason. And all of the trafficking and possession offenses that involve the super amounts carry the same penalty. And Mr. Cabrales received the same penalty for each of the three offenses he was convicted of, 8 years. And it appears to me that this is a clear expression on the part of the legislature that we're trying to make sure that nobody slips through the cracks, that you can't say, because I wasn't present at the sale, you know, all I did was simple possession. You're still going to be penalized because of the amounts involved here. It's clear that this was a trafficking offense. It's not an expression that we intend you to be punished three times for the same
offense. Can you be guilty of the offense involving the larger amount if you offer to sell whatever that amount is of the drug, even if in no time do you ever have that drug?
Well, Chandler involved a situation where the drugs were counterfeit, so there was some substance that was exchanged. And this court hasn't, as far as I know, addressed.
I offer to sell you 4 kilos of whatever.
This court hasn't, as far as I know, addressed that situation where there's simply an offer and no substance of any kind is ever exchanged. But the language in Chandler makes it pretty clear that in order to be convicted of this super amount possession, you have to have drugs that actually contain a detectable amount of whatever drug you're charged with so that you can weigh them. And in that situation, I don't think you could do that. You would have an offer, but you would have no drug to test and no drug to weigh. So how could you prove that the defendant possessed more than a certain number of grams of a drug?
I'd like to come back and explore the penalty part of this. Did I understand you right to say that in this case, in the possession of the super amount, was carried the same penalty as the conviction for trafficking?
As sale of the super amount or as transportation of the super amount. All of them contain the same penalty.
So if possession is implied in trafficking, essentially there is no additional penalty for trafficking as opposed to possession. And wouldn't that argue for the fact that these really are separate offenses?
No, I think it argues for just the opposite. It argues for the fact that the legislature said, what we're doing here is trying to make sure that we've got this covered, that we get the trafficker no matter what point of the transaction we catch him at. We get the guy who actually makes the sale, we get the guy who transports it, we get the guy who buys and simply is possessing it.
Well, isn't
they're all equally guilty, and in no matter what point we catch them at.
But counsel, isn't that based on the volume?
It's based on the volume for the super amounts.
Exactly,
yes.
And that's what we have here, whether it's trafficking or whether it's possession. So Justice Kupp is, you know, questioning, as I am, what difference does it make? The possession or, to say that they are one and the same, it's all based on, you say that it's the legislator's attempt to catch somebody no matter what stage of the process they're in. The only thing that determines what their charge is the volume of the drugs in order to trigger the 8-year sentence.
Sure, but we're talking charge versus conviction. The fact that the person can be charged with all three offenses doesn't mean that a jury will necessarily understand the nuances and convict somebody of sale if all they did was transport the drugs or possess the drugs at some point. So you're preventing
someone from slipping
through the cracks.
The trafficking statute says transport is an element.
Understand that. And juries sometimes understand that and sometimes they don't. And I think the legislature is, in some cases, it's difficult to establish whether when somebody simply has got caught holding the bag, as it were, and so in their defense is, all I was doing was driving this guy somewhere.
So your point is that the legislature wanted to make sure that you couldn't say, oh, I was only holding the bag, so therefore I'm possession. Amount doesn't matter. They said if you're at this amount, you're presumed to be in the business of selling drugs.
Right.
But your point, as I understand it, is that they did not then intend that you could stack all three as separate charges. They just want to make sure you got the same penalty no matter where in the process you were charged, not necessarily that you got stacked three times.
Sure. In this case, they wanted to make sure everybody in the process was exposed to that same eight-year maximum, not that they were exposed to 24 years because, or one person out of the number of people involved here was exposed to 24 years.
Why wouldn't the two transporters, why didn't they get charged with the super amount?
Because they cooperated. Oh. Okay. They didn't go to trial. They cooperated in helping make the controlled delivery.
Even though the amount was the same?
Yes. And that's a very common practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Agar. Mr. Heenan, you saved a little more than 3 minutes of your time.
If the legislature wanted to impose or create two different crimes just to make sure that they caught someone, then why, after 8-9 years of having rants and 8-9 years of having every district in Ohio that I know of up until this case saying that possession and trafficking were not allied offenses of similar import, if all they wanted to do was to make sure that they could catch someone but not punish them for both crimes, then why haven't they changed the law? They could easily, if they wanted to let someone just put these extra crimes out there to let someone get caught, but only be punished for one, have a possession with intent to distribute statute. The state could still charge the person with possession. They could still charge him with possession with the intent to distribute. And when it came time for sentencing, then the judge would merge them. That's not what the legislature has intended. And as far as how could there possibly be in any allied offenses, well, in this case, there were multiple duffel bags. If the state wanted to, it could have charged a possession for each one of those duffel bags. However, at the end of the day, those would have merged. Those would have been allied offenses of similar import. Looking at cases such as Adams, Fears, Yarborough, Cooper, when you look at Adams and Fears and at Yarborough, I can't imagine any situation where there will ever be a rape without some element of a kidnapping. I cannot imagine any case where there ever be any case of robbery where there will not also be an element of kidnapping. There will never be a case where there is a theft offense without that theft, the person committing the theft offense also receiving stolen property. Looking at those crimes in the abstract, there is no way to commit the one without committing the other. When you look at Cooper, Cooper involved involuntary manslaughter as a proximate result of child endangering. And that child endangering was an allied offense of the involuntary manslaughter because the state had to prove that child endangering to get the involuntary manslaughter conviction. However, that second child endangering, where instead of the child being slammed into some hard object and killed from that, was shaken, the child endangering relating to the shaking was a separate act that did not merge. What Cabrales wants you to do, he wants you to overrule Rance. And as Justice O'Donnell brought up in the second case argued with you today, there's a test for that in Gladys. Cabrales cannot meet that test. Rance is working. It was correctly decided. It looked at the state and federal laws and applied them properly. To undo Rance would create a hardship for all the indictments right now that are relying on it. It would create a hardship for the legislators who are looking at the laws they are drafting and looking at Rance as a way to make sure that their intentions are put into our law books. And most importantly, it is the model of a practical, workable rule. It's simple to apply, simple for judges to apply, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and ultimately, most importantly, the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heenan. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshall, please adjourn court.
All right. Here he is.